Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. My name is Melanie Boylan and today I'm joined by Martina Fitzgerald, the CEO of Scale Ireland. Welcome to the podcast, Martina.
Thanks, and I'm delighted to be here. It's my first podcast in my new role.
Oh, it's very nice to be able to pop your cherry, Martina.
I can say nothing to that.
Well, we brought you on here today because you made an announcement at the beginning of March about female founders, especially Irish female founders. They'd raised over 100 million in funding in 2020 for the very first time. What an announcement.
Isn't that a great way to celebrate International Women's Day? Because like politics in my previous career and in this one in Scale Ireland, numbers matter and money matters, particularly in relation to when you're building up a company. So it's great that they reached that historic number, over 100 million. And that research was carried out by an organisation called Tech Ireland, which we are aligned with. And they did extensive research for that report. And the positive news was that female founders of tech companies had raised 105 million for the first time in 2020. Now, there is a but, there's always a but coming. I also think it's important to highlight that female founders are still very much a small minority within Irish tech startup companies. For instance, of the 2,760 Indigenous tech companies listed by Tech Ireland, just 16% have a female founder. And here's another stat, which is an important one, but of the 262 tech companies that raised funding in 2020, just 18% have a female founder. So it's positive. It's a great way to celebrate International Women's Day, but we also have to recognise there's a lot of work to do to bring more female founders on their journey and to success.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually. Do you have any data that explains any reasons why there are so few female founders?
Well, I suppose that's something that Tech Ireland and ourselves will look at further. I think it's worthwhile to deep dive into that issue and to see what areas need to be tackled to encourage them. But I suppose many people will identify it back to the education system and that young girls need to be encouraged to take on the STEM subjects. And we've heard an awful lot about that, and work has been done in that area by lots of organisations. But I do think education is key. And then while they are up and running, and if you have a female founder, that as much as possible, it can be done to support them. Because for International Women's Day, we held an all-Ireland webinar with four female founders, terrific founders. And it was co-hosted by RDI in Kerry and the Awaken Hub in Derry. And in the breakout rooms, we heard from a lot of female founders and they feel it is tougher for them when they're making their pitches. They think they're judged harsher in relation to their models. So some work has to be done to alleviate those challenges. But I'm going to stay on a positive note. I'm not going to, that we are still in a good place in relation to that record. But a lot of work needs to be done to make sure more female founders are coming through.
What was the average age of the ladies that were in the 50 tech startups?
Actually, I don't think we have that data, to be quite honest. But that is a very interesting, that's a very interesting question. And we see that, I suppose, if I was to look at our webinar, we have people like Lizzie One Donations, who is falls into the young category. And we've people of all ages and cycles. Some people becoming female founders later in their careers and shifting careers, which is great.
So tell me a little bit more about Scale Ireland. What do they do? And, you know, what can we learn about their services for, and you call them IDEs, don't you?
Innovation-driven enterprises, yes. And we did not come up with that. That is a term used by MIT. And basically it means that the difference between an innovation-driven enterprise and your traditional SME is that the innovation-driven enterprise will normally be in negative cash flow at the beginning because they have to invest so much in innovation and in staff. And their trajectory is different in that way. And I suppose they then have different issues and different challenges from the very beginning, and cash flow would be one of those key issues. Now, in terms of Scale Ireland, this is a non-for-profit organization that was set up back officially in 2019 by Liz McCarthy, my predecessor, and she was in a perfect place to set this up because her family set up a startup in Kerry that grew up to become Fexco. And so she has a great knowledge of the startup community. And also Brian Caulfield, who has spent almost 30 years mentoring, funding and starting companies. And he's our chair. And also Patrick Walsh, who is, of course, of Dogpatch Labs and the NGC now. And he has been instrumental in helping startups on their journey through Dogpatch. So they all came together and they started up Scale Ireland, and to give, I suppose, the sector a voice, an independent voice, where we could deal with stakeholders and policymakers and engage with them on what are the key issues and difficulties facing the sector, and also promoting the sector Inc. Because I strongly believe that Indigenous tech startup and scale-ups are going to drive us out of COVID, and they're going to be pivotal to the Irish economy in the decade ahead.
Yeah, no, I can agree with you there. And what made you think of going over to Scale Ireland in the first place? What drew you over?
It's going over to the bright side or the dark side? But you know, so I had spent 20 years in journalism, and obviously I was the political correspondent of RT up to December 2018. And 2019, I took a professional sabbatical. But unlike my chair, Brian Caulfield, who has a very strange definition of a professional sabbatical, because he is so busy and he's a chair of so many boards and helping so many companies, and he's the chair of our own board, I did a lot of traveling. I did a lot of talks. I traveled to China, to Washington, got involved with a great program there, running Start on helping women, you know, enter public life in politics, travel to Brussels. So I did a lot of talks around my book, Madam Politician, but I also put the brakes on my career, and I didn't do any journalism really during that year, except one article for The Guardian, and I contributed to a book on the Celtic Tiger by Professor Brian Lucy. But I stayed away because I wanted a reset and to reframe. Where are my priorities now? I spent 20 years, and a lot of people listening in, you know, who will have transitioned to something different will have a lot of sympathy. And also understanding it's a big jump and you have to decide what you want to do. And when I was doing a visiting fellowship in Columbia University in New York, I was in the Brown Institute, and that's all about innovation and using technology to help journalists in their roles. And whether it's transparency, whether it's getting information in a more savvy way, creating apps. Really, I was surrounded by just such really innovative and dynamic students and people from all around the world who'd come to the Institute in Columbia. And that really triggered an interest. And when I came back, I got involved with Inclusio, which is, it ticks a few boxes. Inclusio is a startup which was founded by Sandra Healy, who is a tour de force, a dynamic person herself. And she is the director of the Centre for Excellence for Diversity and Inclusion at DCU. But she is also the founder of Inclusio, which basically uses software to deliver diversity and cultural metrics. So if you're a company, you can find out the level of sentiment in relation to how do people feel a sense of belonging within the company? How do they feel? What is the diverse backgrounds of your workforce? And it's all done in a very confidential way within companies. And she's trialed that. And it's very timely, I think we'll all agree. You can use it in relation to different issues. But I thought that was such a positive positive company and such a positive thing to be part of. And I was on the advisory committee, and that steered my interest towards Scale Ireland when it came along. And who wouldn't want to be part of a sector that is so dynamic, energetic, and so innovative, and that is going to bring, you know, is going to play such a pivotal role, not just in our economy, but I hope Ireland becomes a leading player worldwide. So, you know, it was a journey, and it's a long way from political journalism, but it's also really exciting. And like many people who start a new role, I've met the team when there was a break in the restrictions at Christmas, but the rest has been on Zoom, like today. And it's been really exciting, but it's a big change, but it's an exciting one. And I think I'm in an area that's going to really deliver on so many levels.
Okay, so just out of interest, Martina, what do you feel your past can bring to your future? Is there connections that you can bring to Scale Island, perhaps?
Well, I think, first of all, communications. I think communications is underrated as a skill set. Mm-hmm. I think every day we communicate with people, whether they're customers, their clients, their staff, their investors, their founders. So communications at a high level. Also, I understand, obviously, political systems. I understand policy, research, all of that, and doing it in a concise way. And I think sometimes it's dubbed as stakeholder engagement, but the connections and relationships you build with people are so important. I mean, I have people that I started out in my career in journalism when I was a freelancer and working overnights, and I built up a contacts book. And I would say pretty much many of the people that I dealt with, you know, 20 years ago, if I were to pick up a phone to them, I can still deal with them now. And they cross different sections. And I think your credibility, your reputation, and how you, and the trust you build up with people is so important. And I think whether you're in the startup community or whether you're in political journalism and journalism as a whole, that doesn't change, and how you communicate with them. And obviously, there's substance as well. I was an expert on politics. I'm now up to speed and even, you know, getting more up to speed on all issues in relation to tech startups. So there's substantive issues in relation to this sector.
I can imagine there is, actually.
Yeah. And when you're a political correspondent, you are dealing with justice issues, health issues, politics. You were dealing with, you know, of the political system and parties and all of that, but you were dealing with any issue that was on the agenda in a given day, and you had to read up and really authoritatively find out where that story was going and the issue. So now I suppose I have a deep dive. While it's a bit like politics, that, you know, I will become an expert on this, but you're also facilitating startups, you're facilitating founders, you're facilitating the community and the sector, so that you're eliminating any challenges for them.
Okay, so I suppose this is also contributing to your advocacy for IDEs as well, isn't it?
Yeah, because we represent, we advocate, and we support tech startups. And whatever organization you are, you're going to have key stakeholders. In, for instance, a startup, you know, there's lots of regulations, policies, supports. During COVID, there were so much supports and finance available, different types, different levels that startups had to work through individually. And I suppose we're there to help them in relation to, are there any issues, any challenges in relation to what's being provided, what can be done better, what we need more of, and then to engage with the key stakeholders, whether it's Enterprise Ireland, whether it's the Department of Finance or Enterprise, and to make the system better for them, because it's critical that they have a voice at that level. Startups may not be able to go to those given agencies or state bodies and get help, but we can, and we can make it easier for them. So it's very important that they have an independent voice, and that they also, that their voice is heard at the table when key decisions are being made at that level, and what can be done better for them to help them work and be successful. And that was a critical period. And I have to give an awful lot of credit to my predecessor, Liz McCarthy, and she got help from so many people as well, like Dave Cunningham, but to really identify what was needed at that critical point during COVID for startups, and to make it very clear, and to make sure that the decision makers knew what they had to do to help startups at that critical point.
So, and to dumb it down a little, it's like a citizens advice bureau for tech startups that really know what they're talking about.
Well, we're helping them have a voice at the decision making table, and making sure that policies work for them,
yeah,
and that help them as opposed to hinder them. you know, to put it bluntly, because we need to be helping these. They have enough challenges as it is in terms of cash flow, in terms of getting their ideas, you know, off the ground without any further impediments, and also that the supports that are there work for them in a practical way, because if they're not practical, you know, they're not going to be useful. And what's the point? So we're trying to identify key issues to help startups, to all those state agencies and bodies and others within the sector. And we also do that at an EU level, because you can imagine all the
regulations. I'll ask you that. So you do outside of Ireland as well?
We're members of the Allied for Startups, which is a global organization with, I think it's 45 representative organizations around the world. So when you're on a continental council call, you're talking to people from America, from Poland, from England, from all around the world, and identifying issues that we have in common that are affecting startups. We're also a member of the European Startup Network, and that's 24 organizations solely in Europe. And we're, by the way, so delighted separately that Ireland has signed up to the Startup Nation Standard, which is the EU's Commission's, I suppose, guide for what is best practice for countries in Europe to help startups thrive. And it outlines various issues that they should be doing and what's the best practice in those. So Ireland is a signatory, and that only happened in the last 2 weeks it was announced. And we're really proud and delighted. And it's really important that Ireland plays a leading role in this.
I suppose we're going to be the last English speaking country in Europe.
Well, to be fair, most of my colleagues have excellent English across Europe. I don't know if the same can be said in relation to my own attempts at French or German, but there you go.
It's quite true, though. So the kind of problems that your IDEs, your innovation-driven enterprise companies, can you give us an outline of the kind of problems they've approached you with, please?
Okay, well, there's one big problem that everybody has identified at the moment, and it's early stage startups. They're finding it particularly difficult to get private funding at the moment, and that's been a trend over the last 4 years. For instance, deals under 5 million fell by almost a third in 2020, and that really accelerated in the last quarter of last year, where deals under 5 million fell by 50% in that quarter. So that's a key.
Wow.
That is a trend. That it's a consistent trend, unfortunately, year on year for the last 4 years. So they've had COVID, and obviously they have their challenges. So that is a key issue for those early stage startups and the next generation of entrepreneurs. So in relation to helping them, one of the key issues is the Employment Investment Incentive Scheme. And that's an incentive scheme to encourage private investment into startups and other kinds of companies. And what we have done is highlight the issue at a senior level, but also we conducted research through our partners Tech Ireland. And Tech Ireland did an analysis of the scheme over a decade. And I'll just bullet point it now because I won't go into the intricacies. And I think, but it's really important. What they found is that under 30% of the investments under this particular scheme have gone to high growth startups and scale ups, to your innovation driven enterprises. So they're not going to this sector in the numbers they should be. And coupled to that, you have then this trend of the early stage startups find it difficult to get funding. And I say that despite the fact that, you know, overall, for the first time last year, the headline figures are great because Irish tech companies raised over $1 billion funding last year. But there is a problem in terms of seed stage funding, and we need to help them. So as an organization, we've come together with four other national organizations in the sector. And this is really unusual. I think the collaborative nature of this sector always surprises me, and in a good way, which you can't always say. But in relation to the Irish Venture Capital Association, HBAN, which are the angel investors, Tech Ireland, and also Euronext, the stock exchange, we've all come together and we've put forward a submission to the Department of Finance. And that's conducting a consultation at the moment on this issue. They've identified there is an issue. And we've all come together under the banner headline of Alliance for an Innovation-Driven Recovery, very snappy headline, and group, and basically to identify the issue and what can be done to make it more attractive to private investment and to get that into startups. So that's a really practical example. And in relation to the COVID supports, Scale Ireland at the time, and you can imagine the perfect storm did so much in relation to breaking down the supports that were out there, how they could be made better for startups, and even just signposting them to startups. This is where you need to go for this type of support. And if you're this kind of company, this is where you need to go for another, and listing them and giving them really practical guidance during a horrendous period at the beginning of COVID. And some are still going through it, especially on the early stage. So it's practical advice and support, but also at a top level that we're bringing these and identifying these issues and conducting research on these issues and bringing them to the necessary stakeholders, whether it's the Department of Finance in this instance, to try to get a solution so that we don't lose these startups, who also could have such positive potential in terms of exports, in innovation, in terms of jobs. Because there's a really good story in relation to tech startup and scale-ups. There's 2,000 of them around the country. And they're not just based in Dublin. They're based in Cork. There's 190. They're based in Limerick. They're based in Galway. And in smaller clusters all around the country. And for every one job that's created by a tech startup, another five is created in the wider community. So there's
it's pretty generous.
Yeah, there's huge potential in relation to the sector. But I suppose our job and our remit is to help them identify and to deal and solve key issues with whether it's state bodies or agencies or other agencies, so they can grow and thrive. And, you know, reach their potential, because it's tough enough without those impediments, those funding impediments at the moment.
Now, I know you haven't been in the role very long and you've come in and COVID's happened, but has there been any sort of success story that you can think of, without sort of promoting them too heavily, but is there a success story you can think of?
This is a nice way of saying plug what you want at the moment. Just do it in a short, concise way. And thank you, Melanie, I will. Well, first of all, just to show the positivity and momentum behind the sector, we had decided to hold our inaugural webinar with a key policy maker, and that was the Thornister, the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. And 500 people attended that meeting on a wow. Friday morning. So when you think of all, you know, people go webinar fatigue, there wasn't. I mean, we had to up our Zoom threshold very quickly within 24 hours. It was phenomenal, the response. Wow. And also the positivity within the sector, that they can see the potential and they wanted to play a role in the recovery and driving the economy. But, you know, that surprised me. If you had asked me before the webinar how many people I would have thought would have turned up, it wouldn't have been 500. But that's a positive message. And also, I think the fact that I'm going to come back to it, in many sectors, there's so much competition. What marks this sector out is the collaborative nature of it. And it's one of our values, but it really is striking how everybody comes together to solve. And it does come from that mantra, and I'd love to say I came up with it myself, but I didn't. it was on a call with Elaine Coughlin from Atlantic Bridge, who was a founder herself, and with Liz McCarthy, and it's the shared problems, and we're looking for shared solutions, and it really just sums up the sector and what we're about. And I don't think you would see that in many sectors where key organisations all come together to make a joint submission. Just you know, that surprised me, and in a positive way. And I'll keep saying it because I'm still in pleasant surprise about it.
So, I mean, this is obviously a fabulous time because of all the supports that you're providing and the things you're advocating for. And it sounds like you're getting the help that you need to push these forward as well. When you do eventually get outside of COVID, do you think things will go back to normal again? Do you think you'll be going back to the same old advocacy, or do you think this has shaken things up completely now?
I think we're all living in a different world, and some of the things that we miss will return. I will always have one-to-one meetings and sidebar meetings, but Zoom is also, and all those types, different types of technology have made us be able to do our jobs in a very effective and efficient way. So I don't think we're going to lose. You know, that is probably going to be a hybrid. I've met some of my team, all of my team actually at Christmas when there was, you know, the change in circumstances. But we're all going to be working to some level at home. and some level in the office. I should mention, it's remiss of me to lose an opportunity to plug, to blatantly plug, we are officially launching our Slack channel later in April. And we have 500 founders on that channel, and we haven't officially launched it. And they're all providing peer-to-peer advice and exchanging.
500?
500.
It's amazing. Wow. And
we, you know, we haven't highlighted it in any dramatic way, and yet they've arrived there, and they're all, it's been moderated by volunteers and also by our marketing communications and community lead, whose title gets bigger and bigger, Luke. So a call out to him, who's also a founder. But we have, you know, moderators who are mods, as they're known, who independently and of their own volition in their spare time, moderate, you know, the conversations and help people out on that channel. And it's you know, it again comes back to this united, unifying and collaborative approach. But we will be launching our Slack channel officially at the end of April. So watch out for that. And there's plenty more, you know, to see. But it's such a positive place and a safe place for people to exchange and to get advice and people problem solve. What's the best issue in relation? How do you solve a pricing issue? And everyone comes back with solutions to help founders. I think, you know, it's such a positive platform. And sometimes when you've come from competitive environments, it's a lovely thing to witness and to see, and also to promote. And I think it brings a smile to all our faces, you know, even in the midst of COVID and the lockdown.
So where is Martina going to be in a couple of years' time? Do you think you're going to be sort of continuing this role now and bringing, making the team larger and perhaps, you know, doing more initiatives and innovations?
And, you know, I see, that's a good question. It's a smart question too, a blunt one. But you know what I see? I see Scale Ireland as a startup itself, and it got the best possible, you know, start with those who founded it, and also the credibility and the hard work they put into it. So I want us to scale up just like our startups. And there's huge potential as the sector grows, that we grow as well, and that we can provide more to them, more support, more policy, more research. We have collaborations with Trinity College and TUD Dublin. We're trying to encourage more students to do research on the area. So I would see us growing and, you know, leading an even more dynamic, ambitious team, and that we will be a sizably bigger organization and with a bigger voice. But I think that's the same of the sector. I think the sector is really going to grow, and it's going to be one of those leading sectors for Ireland into the future. And because a digital Ireland, a tech Europe, that lies ahead.
So there is specific criteria that you're going to be looking to support, and you're going to make that available on the website and in further updates. So anybody who's interested in learning more about the type of work that you do and who you can support, where do they have to look to find out your information?
Well, we have a great website, so you can go to the Scale Ireland website. You may look at us on all the platforms. Scale Ireland is on Twitter, it's on Facebook, it's on LinkedIn, it's on Instagram. Thank you to all our social media team, and also to Niamh for driving that, and Luke. You know, there's our Slack channel also. You're very welcome on our Slack channel when we launch it. So you won't have any difficulty being welcomed into our community. There's no escape when you get there, though.
Good comeback. Okay, well, I'm so glad to have you on the podcast today, Martina. Thank you so much for your time and explaining it so clearly. So do let us know when you're going to get the Slack channel, and we'll mention that online as well. Well, thank you for your time. That's all we have for today, but come back very soon to our next podcast.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.